So how have you been?
Good. Yeah, I'm really only on track to write like probably two books this year. I'm kind of, feeling like a bit of a slacker here. So
Well, you could like chill out on the couch for a little bit, you know?
I know. Yeah. No, it's actually worked out pretty well to have at least a little bit more time this year. So that's kind of nice.
Hey, no complaints there. Some people they get some free time or something like that, and they've got to write 15 books. Other people, it's like, I could actually relax for a moment. Some people actually take a year off. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think that would drive me nuts, but being able to feel like, okay, well, if it's 3:30 and the sun is shining and the pool is open, hey, maybe I'll just break off for a little bit and take a dip. So
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad idea. I think everybody needs a little bit of a rest once in a while.
I think so. Particularly in the Midwest where the summers do not exactly last long, so.
No. I didn't have that problem growing up in Phoenix. I had a Summer was like 9 months long. Hey, we're not live yet. Go ahead and answer.
Nope, just a reminder that I needed to make sure I was online.
Gotcha. Ooh, that reminds me. Printed something off and left it on the printer. That's not helpful. There's a reason I start this before I actually start this. Yeah, I think I was trying to set up to use my little AirPods for the headphones, and so I didn't have to wear this big giant thing. And then I think that's how I ended up screwing up all the audio. I'm like, I'm just putting it back. That's something I'm going to have to test on some off
I've been
day.
cleaning out our basement, and I found this. This was me when I was 17 years old, giving a toast at my brother's wedding. So, 1981.
Gotcha. Oh, we may have to pull that back up when people can actually see the screen. Right now, they're just looking at a stack of books and countdown. I like how I've got a reminder here. Start the meeting. I think the meeting's already started. Thank you, Zoom. Thanks for paying attention. All right, there we go. Well, it's 7 o'clock. I never let this timer thing go all the way down. So I'm going to kick off the intro. I'm going to be quiet for a minute till it gets done playing because it plays music over the top of us. So I'm going to shut up for a minute. My wife would don't believe me. Hey, welcome to the channel. My name is Edward, also known as Griftkin here on Twitch. If you look down below, there's a little heart-shaped button. That is the follow button, so go ahead and feel free to click on that. Helps you find me later. Also, there is a subscribe button. I'm not a big fan of asking for money. However, if you do have an Amazon Prime subscription, you do get a free Twitch subscription you can use once a month. If you want to use that on me and help me, pay for my book habit, I would appreciate that. If you're watching this later on YouTube, down below there's the subscribe button. As opposed to Twitch, subscribe doesn't cost you anything on YouTube. That is their version of the follow button. So feel free to go ahead and click on that. And also, if you're watching this on YouTube, if you liked it, hit the like. That'll also help other people find it. I do appreciate that. All right, not right now, but if you also want to click on the About button back again on Twitch, it'll give you all of the links to all of the different social media, which would also lead you to the YouTube channel, where all of these interviews will be put up about 24 hours after the Twitch stream. Come on in, hope you enjoy it, and I hope everybody has a nice day. All right, my little button's not working there. I'm supposed to switch over to this thing, and it's like, it's not moving.
I was wondering if you had American Pie playing as your intro music
No, I timed it. It's only like a minute intro, but when you're sitting there in silence waiting for it to finish, it feels like it's taking forever. But and then yeah, when I went to actually, because I've actually got it all set up on my little Stream Deck thing, so I just push a button and go through the different settings. And when I went to the actual interview setting, it was just like big yield sign. I don't know what that means, but it's like, no, we're not playing today. I had to actually switch it by hand, go old fashioned here. So anyhow, obviously back again for the first time, Brian Freeman. If you don't get that joke, you weren't here for our first time. That's
In
when we actually had.
genuine stereo.
Yes, yeah. I'm hoping everything's all the little things are flying this time. But yeah, last time we did this, it didn't end up recording any of it. In fact, I am going to just be on the safe side in case anything goes
Recording
wrong.
in progress.
I'm also recording the. I'm also going to record the Zoom meeting this time, just to be on the
Excellent,
safe
excellent
side.
plan.
Yeah, I haven't had any problems since then, but since yours was the first one and I messed it up,
Not taking any chances. Anyhow, anybody, obviously, this is not Matt Damon, but also related to the Jason Bourne series. This is Brian Freeman, current author of the current author of the Jason Bourne series. Anybody who's just hanging out because they wanted to talk to Brian, obviously know him much better for it. Well, there we go. Perfect. Bourne Sacrifice. Yeah, I don't have the physical. Both of these, I listened to the audiobooks. And may I say, and I don't think you'll disagree with this, the narrator can make a huge difference on an audiobook. Scott Brick, I think, was excellent. He's done the terrific. First two. Yeah. I'm assuming he's done the third one as well. I haven't gotten quite to
it. In fact, I just finished listening to the Bourne Sacrifice done by Scott myself a couple of days ago. He did once again his usual stellar job. It's terrific.
Perfect. And of course, Jonathan Stride started it all. If you don't know, little known book called Immoral back in 2005, may or may not have won Best First Novel, McCavity Awards in 2006. Also, I know Spilt Blood won a Thriller Award. You are not a very good self-promoter, so there's not a lot of stuff on, like, how many bestsellers. You're hard to find information on. That's all I'm saying. But I know you've got multiple bestsellers. You've got multiple nominations. You probably got some other awards in there that you just haven't made a big deal about. But yeah, you've made a little bit of a name for yourself hanging out there in Minnesota.
Yeah, it's been kind of fun. You mentioned Stride, and in fact, I've only had three books out so far this year. I mean, the Ursulina, the follow up to the Deep Deep Snow came out in February. We've got the Bourne Sacrifice out. I Remember You just came out a couple of weeks ago. You'd think that'd be enough, but no. The new Stride novel, The Zero Night, comes out on November 1st.
People are waiting, so
it's a busy year. It's a busy year.
But yeah, a lot of Stride novel fans out there have been waiting. Cult too.
It's been a couple of years now since Stride was back. The last one was Funeral for a Friend in 2020. So yeah, it's been about 2 years since we had a new Stride novel. So.
Perfect. I know you got a couple other guys too. Cult, if I remember correctly, has he got one coming out? I said Cult. Easton.
We don't have a Frost one lined up, but thank you for mentioning that, because now readers will be on my case again.
Sorry about that. I should have stuck with Colt Ford. That's a singer. Sorry.
All right. Actually, I will say though, I had my annual physical today, and my doctor had the best line. He opened the door and walks in and says, "I've been waiting for this joke. I remember you." It's like, oh yeah.
Yep. Boom. He's been waiting all week for that.
Exactly right.
That one just dropped, didn't it?
Two weeks ago.
Yeah, I thought that one was pretty new, because when we first talked about doing this, it was going to be right when the Bourne one dropped. But you got busy. I get it. I think you did an interview a couple nights ago.
Yeah. I've done several lately. It's been kind of a busy podcast and Zoom month. So
I wanted to watch one of those, but man, work has been crazy. And as we all know, this is my part-time thing. But yeah, totally looking forward to that. So let's go right in. We'll talk about some of the other stuff. Actually, you know what? Before we get to Bourne, one of the things you mentioned earlier is you wrote Ursulina. One of the things that you guys all missed is that we had an excellent conversation about the Ursulina back in like end of February, beginning of March.
Pretty early on, yeah. I think it was your first show.
So it was. First or second, yeah. It was the very first one. Like I said, I think I had two people lined up before you, but then yours just came in perfect, so you actually slid in front of them. Which gave me an opportunity to actually screw up everything in front of somebody I know, so that was helpful. He came back, so obviously, you know, it wasn't the worst experience. But I actually feel bad. We had a great conversation. I enjoyed the heck out of it. Hang on. Sorry. I bumped something and I tried to switch headphones on me. We don't want that. But yeah, I thought we had a great conversation. I loved the Ursulina. For anybody who didn't read it, I told Brian this last time. He's a master of psychological thrillers. But I really thought that, you know, a couple of tweaks and you totally could have made a great horror novel out of the Ursulina if you'd gone a different direction.
Yeah, there were a lot of different ways to go with that book. And I agree. It's one of my personal favorites. I mean, I see the Deep, Deep Snow and the Ursulina, which they kind of go hand in hand. I sort of see them as one creative project. I think of them as one long book. And it's my favorite thing of anything I've done so far. I just love the Deep, Deep Snow and the Ursulina and the emotional closure that comes with with those books. I always tell people these days, if you have not read my stuff and you want to get to know me as a writer, start with The Deep, Deep Snow and the Ursulina, and I think you'll really get a sense of the kinds of stories I like to tell.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned last time, and I'm rehashing a few things just because nobody got to hear it. Definitely read The Deep, Deep Snow and then the Ursulina. I told Brian last time, it definitely looked like Ursulina was planned from the get-go. It was, I don't want to say it was an afterthought. It wasn't an original plan, but the publisher wanted it because I believe Deep, Deep Snow did so well. And you write it in such a way that it looks like it was always part of the plans. The way that you weave Ursulina back into things from the Deep, Deep Snow, it looks like they were plot points that you already had in your head, but you just managed to tie it together. It doesn't look like, oh, and we wanted to write another book.
No, I actually had no idea, that we would ever even do a follow-up novel to The Deep, Deep Snow. It could easily have, stood on its own. And we had a great run with The Deep, Deep Snow, and Audible was very anxious to do a follow-up book. And rather than doing just a straight a second mystery involving Shelby Lake, I really wanted to dive into the sort of open mystery from The Deep, Deep Snow, which was with Shelby's parentage. And so the Ursulina. It's really Shelby's story, but in a very different way. And again, the books just sort of, even though they both stand on their own, they fit together hand in glove.
And I think you nailed the ending of that book as well.
Thank you.
Thank I
you.
love the ending. I don't usually get too emotional, but yeah, that one got me a little bit.
I could start reading that last page right now, and I'd have tears coming down my face.
Excellent job. Of course, part of that, of course, and I want to give a shout out to her because I know she's not on there, but Marsha, I know she's your first reader, as you mentioned one time, I think your best editor. But if Marsha gets through it, the editor usually doesn't have much of a job left to do.
That's true. Yeah, that's very true.
It cuts down. You don't have any of the detectives running in high heels through the snow or anything else you might see on Castle or something like that. I do apologize. I'm a little dark. I don't have my could not find my light that I usually work. I used it to do something and I can't figure out where I put it.
That's okay. I have the halo going on from
Well,
my
hey,
helmet.
that'll work. That's a good look, though. I mean, you guys like, hey, innocence, especially with a hand. I thought hand wave with that little halo. You got it going on, man. So actually, again, I'm going to push off Born Again because I remember you just dropped. That's another one. Like I said, I just got it. I obviously haven't had a chance to read it yet, but just the description of it and stuff. I feel like this is another one where I don't think you went this way, and I can't talk about it, so I'm not spoiling anything. But again, I think it's one of those big psychological thrillers that I definitely think you could have gone very horror story with if you decided to go that route.
I
I'm
mean,
not trying to push you into horror. I'm just saying I think you could
no,
do
no,
it.
but it, some of the ones I've done, they've kind of, they've touched a little on horror, they've touched a little on sci-fi, which I think is also true of I Remember You. In fact, I think I Remember You is currently the number one bestseller on Amazon in the crime and mystery science fiction genre, and a lot of people have been comparing it to Michael Crichton's books, which I think is really interesting. So on in the course of 2 weeks, I've got Robert Ludlum's The Bourne Sacrifice, and now I Remember You compared to Michael Crichton. It's like, well, who next? I don't
Now
know. So
we're just waiting for that movie deal at that point.
there we go.
All right. So let's go ahead and get into Bourne. I have not read the third one. I'm going to admit it. I have been super crazy busy. Bourne Sacrifice. I have read the first two. I think you know me well enough that I don't blow smoke. I have to say, and I haven't read the Lustbader ones, but I have read the original Ludlum ones. I actually like yours better than I do his. No offense to Ludlum. I mean, obviously, if you're going to rank people, somebody's got to be first and second. But I really liked. And here's the other thing that drove me crazy because I remember watching, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. I remember watching some of your early interviews, and you talked about this being kind of a reboot. And so I read the first book, and I'm like, okay, I thought he just talked about rebooting the thing, but this isn't a. I don't think this is a spoiler. Plus, the book's been out for a while now. It doesn't start with him getting shot and losing his memory. You start way back in, and then I'm going, it's like, I know I didn't read all the Lustbader books, but I can't remember anybody named Nova from the books. And I'm like doing a Google search for Nova, and all that's coming up is your book. So I'm thinking, Nova, that's a creation of yours, isn't it?
All of the characters in the book other than Bourne are
Right.
online.
So then I'm thinking, okay, this is a hard reboot, but just starting later. But then in the second book, all of a sudden somebody mentions Marie. I'm like, wait, Marie didn't happen yet. He hasn't mentioned her yet. So it's kind of a hard reboot, kind of a soft reboot. You've kind of dropped it right in that world where the things that don't need to be rehashed don't get rehashed. But you're also kind of starting over. And it's hard to explain to somebody who hasn't read both series of books.
Right, right.
But I'm loving it. I'm just also going, wait, when did that happen?
Yeah. It's a delicate balancing act when you're talking about a character, you know, in a series that's
established
40 years old. The series is 40 years old. How do you keep it going and keep it exciting and fresh? You know, you really obviously can't, unless you're planning to do it as a historical thriller, you can't have Bourne back in the, you know, the 1970s dealing with Vietnam and Watergate. And yet at the same time, you want the classic backstory of Bourne, the fact that here's the man that lost his memory to be there. So, everything about my Bourne series is completely new other than Bourne. And so, I deliberately went into it. What I wanted to do was capture Bourne's, character, authentically from the Bourne identity. And so, when you meet Bourne, you know he is still this hero that, in recent past, at least in my version of it, he lost his memory. And there are hints about his relationship with this woman, Marie, but I'm not going into detail about that. That's sort of, we're making that deal with the reader. Well, don't ask too many questions about this, because we know what happened back then, but that was also back in 1980, and now here we are in 2022. But suffice it to say, this is the same hero, and he's gone through the same things, and he's lost his memory, and he lost his wife. But now we've moved on, so that it's a question of knowing that about the hero. Now these are sort of the next phase in the development of that hero. And it's kind of straddling a delicate line with readers, but I have to say I've been so thrilled with the response from not only new fans who don't, folks can embrace my books without having to, have read anything before it or seen any of the Matt Damon movies, but I've heard from so many Ludlum fans who have really been thrilled to see it, see the series come back to life and come back, fresh and exciting. And that makes me feel good. I mean, I was such a Ludlum fan growing up myself that I love being able to pay an homage to Ludlum and keep his legacy going with books that I hope are every bit as exciting as his were.
I think they were. And like I said, I think to touch on your point too, I think you did a great job. You brought him fresher. Again, if you really wanted him to still be, as you said, a Korean War vet, how old is this man going to be at this point?
Well, right, exactly. I mean, other than Liam Neeson, who seems to be capable of running thrillers up into his 70s, I think most people would think, yeah, it'd be getting a little long in the tooth to get a genuinely aged Bourne in 2022.
Right.
And even Matt Damon probably thinks he's a little bit old to be doing the movies now. So.
Well, maybe might be getting a little tired of that. A little more aches and pains these days. But yeah, like I said, you managed to bring him forward without having to rehash the whole story. Because even people like, and I think I would agree with you, even the people who didn't necessarily read the Ludlum book way back in the day, because that book was 80 something, I think you said.
Yeah, it was 1980 is when the Bourne Identity 1980. Came out.
We won't discuss how old I was back then, the fact that I was actually alive for that. But the fact
you want to see what I looked like back in 1980? I can actually show you.
Let's see everybody.
This was me actually in 1981, I confess, when I was all of 17 years old giving the toast at my brother's wedding. So I just came across that in a box in the basement this weekend. So.
And luckily that was at a time and place where nobody actually has a recording of that toast either, so
True. But I'm looking back and thinking, oh, that's what my hair color used to be. So.
Hair? What are you talking about, hair? But yeah, most of the people, they're at least familiar with the movies. And so, like I said, I think it helps with the younger generation that this is a much more current born. It's, you know, it's their generation. Yeah. It's stuff right. that they understand.
And the plots are all very topical, kind of ripped from today's headlines. They're very much drawn from everything that's going on in the world in the last couple of years, minus the pandemic, but all the kind of government conspiracies sorts of things. So I think it feels very fresh and very topical. So you wouldn't notice that you're talking about a hero that had his roots, you know, back in 1980. In the same way that, you know, I mean, when you're watching a James Bond movie, you're not thinking about the fact that the first James Bond movie came out in what, 60, 61?
Yeah, it was 60 something. I've got a copy of it actually somewhere, but yeah, it's a little older.
Yeah.
One of the things, and I'll tip my hat, not just to you, but any mystery writer these days, detective writer, anything like that, who writes a mystery set in the current age, you guys don't have the easy route that I think period piece writers do, where you've got to write a villain that doesn't get caught, knows about things, you know, DNA, security cameras. It's harder to be a good villain these days.
It is. Yeah, man, boy, it was a lot easier before cell phones and tracking devices and CCTV and all these things. Boy, you know, you practically have to be honest these days. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. Or you have to be a master of disguise. Cough.
There you go.
Cough. Exactly. So I'm going to assume, based on how the second one ended, I'm assuming Lenin is back.
You assume correctly that Lenin is back, yes.
By the way, may I say, not only do I love him as a character, but I love the fact that you went with Lenin and the whole Lenin/Russia, Lenin/Beatles thing. It made for a lot of fun little things, like especially the names of some of his, I mean, you got to call him henchmen. I mean, you don't use that word in the book.
Well, but the fact that his number two, who keeps changing because Bourne and Nova keep killing him off, is
or he kills them off.
Yeah, true.
But I love the fact, I mean, you write some pretty good, these guys are literally, you know, 1960s Batman henchmen, but they managed to work in the current thing. But yeah, absolutely love Lenin as a thing. I'm assuming you're going to have to get rid of him at some point.
You can't help but love somebody who tortures someone to the soundtrack of Strawberry Fields Forever. So.
Yes. I will say, but the only thing I saw coming in the book too is when they said the sign on the side of the pastry truck.
Yes.
I'm like,
okay. You got the strawberries. I'm very impressed.
I did catch it as soon as they went to the thing. It's like, I know exactly what's going to be on the side of that. I didn't get the rest of it. Don't get me wrong. You did, like I said, you wrote a very good mystery. But if anybody who hasn't checked out Jason Bourne, or if you've only watched the movies, definitely check out the new series. You're only three books in. You got time to start from the beginning. You do again. And to throw your name in with another author whom I happen to love, Harlan Coben, I think you do a great job of, okay, this is the book. There is a backstory. You know, if you want to go stride, there's how many backstories? How long is that series at this point?
Yeah, the Zero Night is number 11, actually.
Number 11. I always feel that, like, you jump into stories like, okay, this is the story, this is what's going on in this period of time. If you need to know something from a previous book, it will get mentioned, but it doesn't get rehashed.
Right, exactly.
I've seen some authors, I won't mention names, I don't like calling people out, but if something needs to be brought up, they'll spend like an entire chapter bringing you up to speed. I'm like, you know, yes, I know you want everybody to read the background, but more than likely, you probably wanted them to read the book that you wrote before that. But like I said, you do a great job of, like, this is the book. You can jump in here and not be completely lost.
Right.
Yeah, there might be some Easter eggs thrown in here and there. Just like if you start with your series and have never read any Ludlum, any Lust Bader, any...
You'll still be fine. Yeah.
You'll still be fine, but I will think the Marie thing might throw you. Like, who's Marie? Because I was like, hey, now, I thought he rebooted from scratch. We didn't have Marie in this. But it's a great Easter egg for people who know the story. And let's face it.
Yeah, and one fun thing about the Bourne Evolution, the first one was, if you are a fan of the Bourne Identity, you'll find all sorts of little Easter eggs connected to the Bourne Identity throughout the book. I mean, I throw little plot points. I throw old character names from the Bourne Identity show up in all sorts of different ways in the Bourne Evolution. So there's a lot of fun little tributes to the original book in the Bourne Evolution. So
there is a small chance that I read them too far apart to have caught all the little Easter eggs. I'm sure you probably reread it pretty close to
I did.
But yeah, that would have been a way back machine for me. But anyhow, I loved it. since I haven't read this one, I can't really talk about it. But again, it's only been out for a month. I don't want to do any spoilers, but is there anything you want to tell anybody about the latest book?
You know, The Bourne Sacrifice is when I'm looking at the next book in a series, and obviously now this is kind of my series, so I'm thinking about, you know, what have I done in the first couple books. I first am thinking about, you know, where is Bourne as a character and a hero, and sort of what peril and sort of emotional crossroads does he face, and how do I start dealing with that? And in the case of Bourne, you know, emerging out of the first two books, you had relationships with Abby Laurent and with Nova, and Bourne's relationship with Abby, this Canadian journalist at the end of The Bourne Evolution, is sort of left in limbo. And so I wanted to bring Abby back in The Bourne Sacrifice. And so she plays, once again, a very key role in this book. The other thing is, I'm always looking for, well, how do I sort of do what Ludlum did, which is take very topical themes from the era in which he was writing and kind of spin them out with these really interesting dramatic conspiracies. And as I was thinking about the plot of The Bourne Sacrifice, I was thinking about the whole concept of media manipulation and deep fakes and cancel culture. And so I decided to have a lot of fun with that whole thing. And so there's a very juicy media conspiracy at the heart of The Bourne Sacrifice. And I think when you listen to it, it will sort of make you think, oh yeah, is that what's really going on? And on top of that, one of the extra little bonuses, new readers won't necessarily appreciate it, but Ludlum fans will you know, sort of glom onto it immediately. One of my favorite Ludlum books from the 1970s was a novel called The Chancellor Manuscript, and involves a thriller writer named Peter Chancellor, a very Ludlum-esque sort of thriller writer, who gets caught up in this conspiracy about whether J. Edgar Hoover was actually murdered. And I've always loved The Chancellor Manuscript, and so I thought I got permission from the estate to bring back someone from outside the Bourne universe in this book. So Peter Chancellor reappears in The Bourne Sacrifice, and some of the themes from The Chancellor Manuscript make an appearance in this book. So I think for Ludlum fans, I think that's a whole extra treat layered onto The Bourne Sacrifice.
And once again, I do an interview and end up with another book I gotta read. Great. Just this is becoming an expensive hobby. Okay, so pretty much, I think we're pretty much caught up to speed with Bourne now. I don't, like I said, the new book just came out. Don't want to get into any spoilers. So I do have a couple of things outside of that. First of all, let's talk about I Remember You. That one's just dropped. I did read the snippet on it.
I love that cover with the upside down city sort of dripping down toward the title, too.
Yeah, you love it. Every bookseller in America is going crazy. Can't remember what there's a couple of books out in the last decade or so. One was had a dog on it was upside down on the cover, and another one was just a head and it was upside down. And every bookseller I know just walks by and they start to turn it over. They know that's where it's supposed to be.
That's right.
It is a cool looking cover. I just know it's gonna drive a few booksellers crazy. Maybe a couple librarians too. Let's face it. I think to a certain extent, bookstores and libraries also bring. They attract a little OCD. I'll admit it. I've worked for a bookstore for a while. I'm not OCD about a lot, but for some reason, books is like, well, no, this is not in alphabetical order. That's upside down. Ugh, drive me crazy. But yeah, so I'm looking a little interested in this one. It has an interesting premise. This isn't a spoiler because it's in the whole blurb about it. But basically, the idea that she's having these dreams. And it's not necessarily, you know, the first time we've ever heard of this, but she's actually sounds like she's questioning her sanity because these dreams seem so real. They feel more like memories, but they're not hers.
Right. Yeah. The premise of I Remember You, which I think is why people sort of think of it as a bit Crichton-esque, is that it's told by this young woman named Hallie Evers, and Hallie actually dies at the beginning of the book. Her heart stops. And when she's revived, she wakes up in the hospital and her head just feels crowded, like there's just too much stuff stuck inside mm-hmm. there. And she has these strange dreams and recollections that don't seem to fit with her life, and so she remembers people that she's sure she doesn't know, and she remembers a city so well that she can identify what these places are and know where what's happening around the next corner, and yet she knows she's never been to this city in her life. So what's really going on inside Hallie's head? Because on one hand, she's gone through a remarkable experience of dying and being revived, and on the other hand, there's a lot of mental illness in Hallie's past, and her mother died of schizophrenia, and so Hallie has spent her life scared that she's going to end up going down the same path. So there's a it ends up being sort of a quest on Hallie's part to sort of figure out what's really going on inside her head, and those are just all the beginnings of the twists and turns that that take her across the country.
Gotcha. And let's see, this is why I said you're a great psychological thriller writer. If you'd been a horror writer, she would have had all that because she had a heart transplant and it was the heart of the killer, something along that lines. What was that one stupid movie, something about hands or whatever? The guy got somebody else's hand and then it wants to murder things. It's like, my hand is controlling itself.
Then there was a movie from I think the 1960s called The Beast with Five Fingers, which was about a disembodied hand that was going around to kill people. And I my brother and I saw
Thing got loose, huh?
My brother and I were reading the movie review of that one night in the 70s, and the review was nonsense about a hand running around loose fails to generate any excitement. And we're like, okay, we got to watch that. So.
Yeah, it's funny what sounds stupid sometimes will make you watch it. I always tell people one of my guilty pleasures, it's not a good movie, it's not a great movie, but I laugh my butt off at that stupid movie, Spaced Invaders. Not space, spaced, and it's about some aliens that are a little crazy trying, showing up on, it's not a good movie, but I laugh. It made me watch it. What can I say? All right. So this one coming from left field. Tell us a little bit about Allie O'Brien.
Well, now you're going back a ways. People will sometimes ask me, am I ever interested in doing something in a different genre other than thrillers, and I say, well, actually, I've got a couple books out that are sort of more contemporary fiction, women's romance, chick lit sort of genre, and it started with a book called The Agency. I think that came out in 2009, 2010, something like that.
Sounds
It's
right.
old. The author's name was Allie O'Brien. It was actually a book that I worked on with my agent Allie Gunn in London, and so we combined our names for the pseudonym and came up with Allie O'Brien. Allie had always wanted to do a book about life as an agent in the crazy London literary community, and she wasn't a writer, so she asked if I'd be interested in tackling that, and so I thought it sounded like fun, and I came up with the plot and worked with her on that, and then I wrote the book. The agency was just a lot of fun. I mean, it's very, sarcastic and ironic and funny. It's told in a female first person voice, and we had a great run with it. It got a great review in People magazine, and then I did a follow up book. Actually, it was kind of under tragic circumstances because my lovely agent Allie passed away
I'm sorry.
She's 45 years old and passed away of a cerebral hemorrhage overnight. It was just terrible. So I wasn't sure that I even wanted to do a follow-up book because everything about the agency was so caught up in my relationship with Allie. But I had an idea for another book in the same vein. So I wrote a book called West 57, and it's still out there under the name B.N. Freeman. West 57, again, female first-person narrative. Very funny, emotional, it's a very sweet-hearted book. I really love the book, and I think anybody who reads it will see that it's kind of a sequel to The Agency, even though it's got different characters and names. I deliberately changed that all after we lost Allie, but West 57 is unlike anything that I've written in my thriller genres. It's completely different, and yet I think it's a lot of fun to read. I always encourage my fans, hey, if you want to see the other side of Brian Freeman, go check out West 57.
Yeah, I just ran across it the other day. I hadn't even realized you had written under another name, so I had to ask you about that, especially when it came up. It's like it's a female's name. Of course, you do that a lot in romance, let's face it. Although a lot of times I've noticed, and this is a little bit off topic, but just talking about using different names for different things, there's a lot of mystery writers these days. It used to be completely the other way. I think we all admit it. Women would write under either male names or initials to get published and to get read. There's a lot of men writing with female, and not just men writing in the romance genre, but the mystery genre. A lot of men writing under women's names now too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. I mean, me, I'm still writing under my own name, but I'm doing, you know, women's voices in the books. So I figure, you know, take me at my word, and I invite the women readers out there to you know, read The Deep Deep Snow and The Ursulina and Thief River Falls and I Remember You, and let me know how I did. I love those books. I hope that the women readers do too, and feel very connected to the.
Well, I think you have to too. I know there's a lot of people. It's like, you know, a man can't write a woman, or a woman can't write a man. It's like, well, then what do you want? Do you want your author to write, okay, I'm male, so I'm going to have nothing but male characters in my book, or vice versa? Right. It's like that doesn't work.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, you know, I would say, well, it would be like saying, you know, well, you wouldn't say that, you know, an actor can't take on roles, you know, completely outside their perspectives. Because these days, you know, there's so much nonsense about the idea of, well, you can't cast, you know, then, you know, an actor in one race to do another race or a different ethnicity. And it's like, well, that's they're actors. That's their job. So.
Right. And I mean,
that's the job of the writer as well.
To me, it depends on if it's intricate to the plot. I mean, you know, for instance, because it doesn't matter, Daredevil, I don't know if you've ever watched the Daredevil TV series. Kingpin was white in the comics, and he's a white guy, Vincent D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio?
Yes, yep. He plays the Kingpin. But in the movie, it was played by Michael Duncan Clark. And no matter what you feel about the movie, I thought Michael Duncan Clark did a great job. It wasn't intricate to the plot whether this character was white or black. Obviously, you're not going to pull a white guy or an Asian guy to play Malcolm X in a documentary. So, yeah, anybody, if you're an actor, you're going to be able to act as different characters. Again, I don't feel like it's offending anybody, I would hope, if it's not intricate.
Oh, it's certainly offending people, but
it shouldn't be. Let's forget that.
But it shouldn't be. Yeah, but I mean, that is the point of being an actor, is to inhabit other, you know, characters.
Right, but as an author, if you write... And I'll just, let's go the other way, because I don't want to make it one way or the other. But, you know, an Asian author can write a white character. That's no big deal.
Right.
In fact, if you don't write other races, well, then you're not being inclusive. But if you do write other races, then, well, how can you say that you have no one? We can understand. Okay, we're going to get off on a topic. Let's stick to books. but like I said, I love the fact that you've written those under there. There are plenty of great female authors writing great male characters. There's plenty of great male authors writing female characters. I don't know if anybody watched it. If you want to watch, go back and have a good conversation about characters and breadth and stuff like that. Not to take away the focus from Brian, but watch the Jen Lyons interview. She went into that. It was a very good conversation. So anyhow, like I said, I just had to tease you a little bit because I just found out, I mean, I've known you how long, and I just found out that you'd written under Allie O'Brien.
Yeah.
So I had to bring that out, find out a little bit what it was about. Sad, but I do love the backstory that, you know, this was your editor's idea. So I'm glad she at least got to see that first book come to fruition.
Yeah.
So this is another thing we talked about last time. Probably not going to go quite as long this time. But of course, I didn't have the recording saved. So all the stuff I was going to go back into and write down later, I couldn't get. So let's go back in and talk about, we saw the Stride novels coming down. What else is coming down the pipe? Or pike, depending on what country, or depending on where you're from.
Yeah. Well, next, I'm kind of stacking up projects now, aiming toward next year. In writing The Born Sacrifice, that was probably the fastest book I've ever written. It was due at the end of January, and as of early December, I think I'd written about 20,000 words, and the book ends up at about 105,000 words. So in about 6 weeks or so, I wrote 80,000 words, which was just an insane pace. And yet, for Bourne, it really works because there's sort of a propulsive element to the narration that I sort of think reflects the conditions in which I was writing it. However, I also concluded I never wanted to have that kind of deadline pressure again. So the next Bourne novel, The Bourne Defiance, is also due at the end of January, but I'm in the last three chapters or so right now, so it's almost
Gotcha.
done. Yeah, so that's moving along, and I've got I'm doing a contract now for a new Audible original. Really excited about the story. Audible is they originally did The Deep, Deep Snow and the Ursulina first, and so now I'm
Right.
doing a third project for Audible. We're working on that. I've got a standalone for Blackstone in the wings that that I'm going to be working on, and another project I'm working on that I can't say anything about,
Okay.
but it's a lot of fun. So yeah, they're going to be keeping me busy here, and that means I'll be keeping readers busy next year as well.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, you already answered the other question that I forgot to ask. Is there going to be another Bourne under your belt? Sounds like there is. I know Ludlum did three, Lusbater did, I think, 11. So this is
Yeah,
going to
so
be
now
at least
I'm
four for
between.
you.
I will have exceeded Ludlum himself, and now I'm kind of chasing Eric, so.
Well, you know, let's face it. I always feel like, I think that's, maybe you can just talk to this. I think that's always the hardest part for a writer. I think almost every character reaches an end at some point. And I'm not going to ask you, you know, if Stride or any of those other guys have reached that end yet. Yeah, you know, it always something could happen. But I think sometimes it's hard to let go. But I also think too, a lot of times, especially like you've got a lot of different series. Some authors, you know, seem to be writing the same series over and over again. And I feel like a lot of times it's not that they want to write another, I don't want to put anybody out there, but let's say character X name. It's that the publisher wants another character X name. And I think
Yeah, I think
sometimes it
that's probably
helps
true.
to spread out. I mean, you know, creative juices, write a little something else, not be
Right.
tied into the story that's 11 stories deep. You get to do your own.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of the things I really enjoy about where my career is right now is I get to tell such a diverse range of stories and embrace, you know, such really, really different characters. I mean, I can pick up a Stride novel with this sort of intense, brooding police detective and put that down and pick up Jason Bourne, and I've got this very action, adrenaline-oriented novel, and then put that down and I'm writing in the female first person with a very intricate psychological mystery. So yeah, that's to me, that's the fun. That's what keeps me energized is I'm not doing the same thing over and over again. And you know, it when I look at series books, I was talking with Tom Colgan at Putnam, who does the Bourne novels, about, you know, what keeps a series fresh. And I said, you know, my attitude is that series don't die because of plots. They die because the characters get stale. I think if all you do is take a hero as a static, you know, character and drop him down into a different plot each time, I think readers are going to get tired of that pretty fast. I mean, I think the characters need to keep growing and evolving and changing based on what's happening to them in the stories. And that's certainly what's happening in the Stride series. I mean, Stride is a very different man in the Zero Night and Funeral for a Friend than he was when you first met him in Immoral, because of all of the things that have happened to him along the way. I think that's what keeps the series fresh and exciting for readers, and is why new readers can keep discovering the books, because the characters are not just the same. They're dynamic and they're changing. And so I think that's true with Bourne as well. I mean, I'm as I say, I'm wrapping up the Bourne Defiance right now, and I think what you'll find in the Bourne Defiance is a lot of the threads in the first three novels sort of come together in the fourth one and wrap up sort of this long story arc. So my attitude is, you know, I think, you know, it every few books you want to sort of reboot a series like that. And so I could easily see that, you know, in book five, book six of Bourne, that I'll end up kind of doing something completely different and introduce a lot of new characters and kind of think about, you know, starting over again to make sure that this hero continues to feel, you know, fresh and compelling for the reader.
And I think to tie into that too, I mean, fresh and exciting, you know, that may get somebody to read a book, but so to actually, I think the fact that you're talking about the fact that he changes, that's what makes him relatable to people. And I think that's what invests the person into that character that, you know, hey, I need to read the next Bourne book. I need to read the next Stride book. I need to read the next, you know, Easton book. Sorry. you've got so many series, you can't write a new one for all of them every year. unless we're going to start getting novellas, let's face it, which I don't think anybody wants that either. I am a little excited to hear about the Audible book that I really liked. As you said, both of those two, Deep, Deep Snow and Ursulina, started out as Audible books. And I absolutely, I'll tell everybody right now, everybody should go read those, listen to those, whatever, you know, however you want to do it. Absolutely excellent stories. And it's, again, you know, let's remember, Deep, Deep Snow was supposed to be a standalone.
Right.
The fact, though, that that book was so good, it was always intended to be a standalone, that not only did another story come out of it, but a great story came out of it, I believe. I don't want to say better, because they were two different stories, even though they're tied together. Yeah,
it's a very, very different story. And yet, again, they just worked together hand in hand so beautifully. So
Yeah. So, but like I said, definitely, if you haven't read those guys, go ahead and read those. Some people are going to watch this just because of the Jason Bourne angle. But, you know, if that helps introduce people to your other characters, I'm all for it. Like I said, I do love what you've done with Jason Bourne. No offense to Robert Ludlum. I do like your current stories better. But that's not to put down his stories at all. That's just the fact that, and I'll be honest with you, the biggest thing I had, especially with the first Bourne novel that ever written, is I had a hard time believing that the Canadian finance minister fell in love with the guy who kidnapped her. That's just a personal thing. I felt like almost, this is rare, but I actually felt like the movie did it better. I was much more believable for the character in the movie that was played in the movie than it was for me to have this, you know, very high level professional woman that would do the same thing. That's just a me thing. It also might be a sign of the times. You know, if I'd read that, but let's face it, 1980, I was nine. So, you know, I had been around almost a decade, but I think maybe the story was different back then. So I think that's one of the things that helps with you rewriting it now, is it brings all of that into what's current. Let's face it, we watch old movies, they don't age well, you know, things,
sure.
TV shows especially. I mean, I won't even mention a thing there, but there are TV shows like, no, they couldn't be done today. There's movies that couldn't be done today, but things have changed. And I feel like you with the Jason Bourne series has done that too. You've pulled some of that stuff that maybe wouldn't have even raised an eyebrow back in the 80s, and you've brought it into, you know, what the current is. And I think that's going to help bring in more and more fans, not only to follow along with the Bourne series, but again, like I said, I hope that they start reading some of your other stuff. I know you keep telling me I shouldn't make people read 20-year-old books. It's not quite that old. But I still love Immoral. That was a great, great start to that one.
It's getting there. 17 years.
17. Now, yeah. I knew it was getting close. But yeah, I mean, I'll tell people, if you can find it, read Immoral. If you can't find it, obviously, like I said, you can drop in the middle of any of Brian's series. The only two that I would tell you not to, and you've got to read them in the order they were published, just because I feel like it ties the stories together. Read Deep, Deep Snow, and then read the Ursulina, even though Ursulina is technically a prequel. I just feel like you've got to read them in that order. It's a much different story. I think the end of Ursulina is much more poignant if you've read the Deep, Deep Snow first.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Don't read the books backwards. That's just weird. Don't do that. But like I said, Immoral if you can get it, but any of the Jonathan Stride books, definitely go ahead. I'm actually falling in love more and more, I think, with some of your standalones, which is weird for me because I love series. It's like, if there's a good book about something, I want more of it. But Spilled Blood, as I remember, that was a standalone, wasn't it?
Yep.
That story was really good. We won't discuss how many of your audiobooks I got a few months back when Audible had them all on sale for like $1.99. Got to play a little catch up.
For Audible Plus members, there's a lot of them that are available in Audible Plus too. That's the one where you don't
your subscription one.
A bunch of them are available just for free out there. Right. You're not using credits or anything. So
gotcha. Yep. So I've got way too many Brian. You can't say that, but I have way too many Brian Freeman books I've got to catch up on. My Audible list is probably a good chunk of that's just your stuff. But obviously,
well, I'm listening to. I just finished up The Bourne Sacrifice on Audible, and I'm actually listening to I Remember You on Audible. And it is a new narrator for me, Carlotta Brenton, is doing I Remember You, and I'm only about three chapters in, but she's terrific. I'm really enjoying her take on
Yeah,
it.
I'm gonna try to behave myself. I think I'm gonna try to read that one
Okay.
physically. I keep going back and forth. As long as I keep them in different genres, I can do multiples. Like right now, I'm reading Nosferatu, Joe Hill. I'm listening to, I want to call it was Oath of Swords. I think it's a, hang on. I don't want to say the wrong name. I'm gonna feel really, 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 really bad if I do it. Da-da-da-da. Audible, where you at? Yeah, it was Oath of Swords by David Weber, who I've also read before. It's like I said, as long as I keep them in different genres, I'm okay.
Well, and if you want to add to your Audible roster too, their multi-voice narration of Dracula is incredible. It's
Oh, wow.
really good.
And I am actually loving that more and more of these. Don't get me wrong, there's some good voice actors out there who can do multiple voices. Like I said about Scott Britt was
January
excellent.
Lavoie doing the Deep, Deep Snow and the Ursulina. I mean, you'd swear she's so good at inhabiting the characters, you'd swear it's a multi-voice narration, and she just does it all herself. So.
But I also think some of these ones that have used multiple, I think it's really helped on some of that. Let's face it, I'm not shy. People say I have a decent voice. I am not narrating a female voice. It's just not gonna happen. So like I said, some of these ones where they get the multiple people, I've really, really loved each character. I'll give a shout out right now to anybody who does the narration for these. I can't imagine trying to remember which voice I used for which character.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that amazing?
And
Yeah,
which
it's a
accent was
real
this one? I
art.
don't remember now. That's just
Yeah,
that's why
it's a real art. Yep.
the way they jump back and forth. But let's face it, I mean, as a writer too, it's easy to, I think, if you have a character in mind, okay, I can write this character. But those side characters, because those side characters have to have their own backstory, even if it's never written in the story, they've got to have their own
Sure.
character. And being able to keep track of that, because you know your fans. You mess up one thing, it's like, well, that wasn't him, that was her.
Yeah,
And
you'll hear about it. Yeah.
your fan mail is gonna go crazy. But again, I think I'm kind of going all over the place now. So we've covered I Remember You just dropped. We've covered the ones that are coming out. We've always covered the Bourne ones. Anything else that you wished I'd asked, or anything that you want your fans to know that maybe you haven't been asked yet?
No, I just always encourage folks to go and look me up. They can go to my website, which is bfreemanbooks.com. That's all one word, bfreemanbooks.com. They can find out information about all the books. There's links to order them. There's links to be able to send me emails and get on my mailing list. Or they can find me online on all the various social media platforms. I'm out on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. You won't find me doing any TikTok dance moves yet, but who knows what the future
We'll work
holds.
on that. Yeah, I don't dance on TikTok either. I just announce these things on TikTok pretty much. But yeah, so just so everybody knows, obviously, if you're watching this on Twitch, you're not going to be, I don't have a spot for that. This will go up. My daughter's got me crazy busy tomorrow, as is my wife's honey-do list. Either tomorrow night or Saturday night, this will also go up on YouTube. YouTube will have the links to bfreemanbooks.com. It will have links to all of his social media, just so that you can click and go. And also probably have a couple of links out to some of his books. And as always, shout out to I'm gonna go first, as we all know, I'm gonna say Bookworm Omaha. If you're in the Omaha area, swing down by 90th and Center. They don't sponsor this. They're just my local bookstore, local independent bookstore. Nothing against the big guys. If you don't have a local independent new bookstore, I have no problem with Barnes and Noble or even Gasp, Amazon. I say as I'm streaming on Twitch, which is owned by Amazon, so I can't badmouth them too much. But if you've got a local independent bookstore, go ahead and hit them first. I did think in my previous ones, I gave out a shout to Once Upon a Crime and Fitkers,
Yep,
Fitchers.
those are kind of my two primary Minnesota bookstores, and they typically have all my books in stock,
Yep, and I will
so those are great for the
probably,
call.
yep, I'll re-tag all three of those with their links too. So if you happen to be in, the Minnesota or Nebraska area, you've got some options. Always appreciate that. Brian, I certainly appreciate you coming back, letting actually have a people chance to hear you this time. Because again, I felt so bad. You and I thought, had a great conversation, had
It
so much fun. And then I
was
got to edit it the next day and I start playing it, getting ready to edit it. It's like, why can't I hear anything?
good. Yeah,
But yes, I have super, I've double checked. Like, if you see me keep looking down, it's because I'm making sure the audio is still going. But totally appreciate it. Totally appreciate you taking your time out. Say hello to Marcia for us again. Obviously, thank her for giving up your evening so that you could come do with us. As soon as this gets posted to YouTube, I will go ahead and post a link on Twitter so everybody knows it's out there. And then I will probably also sometime next week, this will also go, I have an Apple podcast too. So if you don't have time to sit down and watch this all the time, but you got time to just poke it in your ears while you're running on the treadmill, I've got that down there so people can listen to again. So thank you very much, Brian. Appreciate anybody who stopped by.
Thank you.
And we will catch you guys all later.